The job market in Chicago and across the country is a tale of two competing narratives. There are the job numbers compiled by the government, which detail the number of job openings, people looking for work, the rate at which people are quitting, and the number of people who are out of work and still looking. There is also your own experience. If you're having a hard time finding a job, your own frustration outweighs all the stats in the world. Hello. I'm WBBM Noon Business Hour host Rob Hart, and this week we talked to Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago, about the reality of the job market and what you can do to get ahead on this weekend's edition of At Issue. Rick Cobb of To Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us today on At Issue. And when we talk about the job market in the Chicago area, how does our region stack up with the employment market nationwide?
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge. Chicago has such a blend of agribiz, financial and manufacturing, and a legacy. So the sad news is we tend to have a slightly higher unemployment rate than the other major metropolitan areas of the United States. And it's a little less malleable. It doesn't go up and down as much as other markets, which is good, but it doesn't come back like a lot of the other markets do, depending on what's going on.
Politically speaking, the upper Midwest and the economy of the upper Midwest has been such a potent image that has been utilized by campaigns and candidates from both major political parties, with an obvious focus on manufacturing and the turmoil and disruption of the manufacturing space in the upper Midwest over the past 50 years or so. Another issue, too, in smaller Midwestern cities has been mergers and acquisitions. Cities like Milwaukee and St. Louis that used to be the home to mid-sized corporate headquarters. A lot of those corporate headquarters were merged out of existence or acquired and moved elsewhere. How has Chicago been able to basically rise above some of those trends, or do those trends exist here?
No. The answer is yes and no, right? What you have is, Archer Daniels Midland. You know, they were down in the farmland forever, and they had to come up here with the corporate headquarters. Caterpillar is another example. So big companies that were typically rurally based and had sort of an island that they sat out on had to get back into a larger metropolitan area to attract the talent they needed, which was far more technical with a higher level of education than the traditional manufacturing environments. So that's the good news. I think the other problem that we run into, though, is the balance of the cost of a college or university education in Illinois against the opportunities outside of the Chicagoland area creates this huge exodus of talent out of Illinois, about 135 million, I think, last year. 135,000, excuse me, not million, 135,000.
Now, when you talk about that, we're talking about people who are from the Chicago area. They go to high school in Chicago, and maybe they go to a college or university in the Midwest, and then they're out, and then they think about going back home, but they realize that maybe there are better professional opportunities elsewhere.
I think it's more difficult than that, because what we've got is a very costly state school system. Ours is the fourth most expensive in the United States. It's hard to believe that, but it is. So what happens is when someone's looking to get a college education, they can go elsewhere, even if it's another Midwest college or university, or even out to the East or West Coast or wherever, and they can get an education that costs less. The challenge is people don't move. Once someone has gone to another market, they go, wow, I really like it here. There's no snow. Whatever you want to pick is the itch that you want to scratch. And they just don't come home. And that's the thing that we have to look at as a state and also as a metropolitan area. It can't just be tourism.
Is this a fairly recent development? Because I'm thinking back to the stereotype 20 years ago, which was you graduated from a Big Ten school, you moved to Wrigleyville, you met Mr. and Mrs. Wrigleyville, and then you moved to the suburbs, but all the while maintaining all of your professional connections in the city. Is that still the case today?
Well, you hit on it earlier. You know, the thing that you've run into now is merger and acquisition. I mean, Wrigley's owned. You know, a lot of the companies that were the backbone of the business have been purchased. Many of the bigger companies in Chicago, Motorola or pick one, they were either very closely held or almost family controlled. Mars at one point was the two brothers. And when those things transition and you have those opportunities don't exist in one place anymore. And the other thing from the other side, corporately, companies have recognized, and I look at Medtronic as a good example of that up in Minneapolis. They rotate their talent around all the time. You know, it's like if you're in the same job for 4 years, you're probably making a mistake. So that also means relocation. So companies expect different things out of their employees in the big organizations, and there aren't as many individual privately held and smaller concerns.
Now, these are all macro issues that policymakers have to tackle. But if you are looking for a job in this environment and you want to stay in the Chicago area, obviously you can't control the weather. You can't make it warm in Chicago year round. So what can you do if you are trying to find a job in this environment?
Right. So there's a few things about we should look at what are the best markets to be in Chicago right now, just generically. And so the tech sector is still quite strong. As a matter of fact, it went from 6% to 18% of the market for college graduates. It's fintech, finance tech, it's biotech, medtech. So the industries that we have here, we have a very large medical technology collection of companies here. That's a good place to go. But to your question, you can't focus on the macro when you're in the market. You only need one job. And I say that so many times, but it's still true. And people, particularly people who are just coming out of school now or the last 10 years of graduates, they have this concept that you can do it online. You can look online. You can go to Indeed or Monster. I guess Monster's in trouble now, but Indeed's one of the big ones. LinkedIn. And you're going to find opportunities. Well, yeah, if you got Ruby on Rails coding and that's the hottest thing going 10 years ago, you'll find a job quickly. But the average person needs to get out there and network and see people. And it's just, you know, the irony of it is that the population that's coming out of school now, incredibly bright, unbelievably competent in almost all of the technologies that I can even begin to ponder. But a conversation face-to-face is absolutely terrifying. And their ability to understand what the agenda is in an interview, which is nothing about what you want, but what about that other person wants. I keep telling them, it's like dating. Your first date, you don't start telling your date what you want out of life, because it's never going to have a second date.
It's interesting you mention that, because a friend of mine who made the transition from, she was a network news producer in Washington to working in corporate communications and aerospace. And she told me the same thing. It's like, it was kind of like dating when I made that move, because I sent out letters to like dozens of companies and applied to dozens of jobs. And I said, well, that's not really encouraging. I stink at dating. I was never, I was right once. And I was, thankfully it was, you know, I'm still correct to this very day, but that can be intimidating to a lot of people if you are not naturally charismatic, or if you don't think you're naturally charismatic. So, what can you do to find that within yourself?
Well, the good news is, to your point, once you find the right partner, you can stay married. You know, that's the message in this, but you still have to go through a lot of pain and angst to get there. So if you're naturally an introvert, no one can turn you into an extrovert. You're not going to suddenly come up with all these glib, funny, insightful things to say if that's just not who you are. And we have plenty of clients over the years that are like that. So you have to be able to identify what that person across the desk wants, not needs. And there's a difference. So, and it's sort of like, I think you and I've talked about this before. I could say, I want to lose weight. And then at lunch, I order an ice cream sundae. And you're like, I thought you wanted to lose weight. Well, you know, don't tell me. And, you know, shut up and stop saying that to me. I can do what I want. But, you know, it's what I want. So you focus on wants to get to needs. And when you're talking about yourself as a product, no one cares what you want. No one cares what you've done, except where it intersects with what the other person might want. If you're super competent and so good at what you do that in the course of an interview, you say, well, you say, well, what's your collection rate on this particular piece of business? And you're the person that you're interviewing with said, well, it's usually like 10%. And he said, I could double that in 6 months. Here's the problem with that statement. I didn't tell you I wanted that. And the other problem is you're either now a threat because you can actually do it, and I've never been able to do it, or you're a liar. And I don't need that either. And neither of one of those was what I wanted. What do I want? I want somebody who can articulate what? That I can see you in this job. I can see you being here working for me, doing the things that I need done and want done, and I can visualize that happening. Is it a reality? No, but that's the fantasy you have to create. So if you're introverted, you got to be able to talk about the things that you've done, not just a boring kind of linear kind of, and first I was this, and then I was this.
And then I did that, and then I did that, and then I did that.
You got to be able to cite the biggest number you can legitimately claim. If you say, last year I increased, my sales went up by 3%, I don't know what that is. You know, make it the dollars, whatever they are, you know?
Yeah, because 3% of nothing is still nothing.
Right, exactly. 3%. Yeah, exactly. So you want to make it something that is the biggest number that you can legitimately claim, and you want to be able to tell the story about it so that they can mentally visualize you doing what it is that you say you know how to do.
This is WBBM News Radio At Issue program. We're talking with Rick Cobb of 2Discern in Chicago about the hiring market in Chicago and what you can do to improve your prospects if you are looking. You talked about LinkedIn and Indeed and other job services that have existed over the decades that do present the image of making things easier for you and also making things easier for the employer as well. But the reality is it's psychological torture, in my estimation, for the people who are applying, and it doesn't really help the employer at all. On the employee side, if you spend 5 minutes on LinkedIn, you see a lot of people who are talking about how frustrated they are in their job search. They have sent out hundreds of applications and they've only received, you know, two or three nibbles or two or three calls back out of those hundreds of applications. And as a result, you know, just because all of those jobs are available to you for you to apply, does it make the hiring process seem a lot more difficult than it is? Because 20 years ago, you're not sending out hundreds of applications. Maybe you're sending out 10 and you get one response from those 10 as opposed to one out of 100.
I don't think the actual process has changed that much, but the multiples of behaviors it's insane what's happened. I used to tell people, you know, 30 years ago, you know, I can get 25 resumes sent to me by running an ad in the Tribune, and I'm going to get 25 resumes. I don't have any responsibility to hire any of those people. I can decide that I'm going to throw them all down the stairs and pick the ones that landed on the third step. I can decide that anybody went to XYZ school will not be interviewed because I hate that school because they beat my football team. This can be totally subjective. So now it's just gotten bigger. And think about why Indeed or why LinkedIn or why any of these websites exist or businesses exist. They don't exist for the individual user. Nobody, except for super influencers and somebody who's a celebrity, you know, is on LinkedIn. That's one thing. And you can't connect with them anyway. But in general, what you've got is they've created this pool of people who want to work. And if I get 100,000 people who are interested in a job, the employer can look at the 100,000 through software, whatever they want to do, and find them. It's not really very hard for them to do that. Ultimately, though, it doesn't really make any difference. I'm going to hire the person I like. It doesn't mean I want them over to my house for dinner every night. It means I feel like I like this person. I can see them, visualize them doing the job. That all happens in person. If you're doing anything that doesn't increase the likelihood that you get face to face with somebody that might hire you, you are wasting your time.
Who is hiring on job boards? Like, what are some of the functions where you might actually have some success? And what are some of the positions? I would imagine the more senior positions in management, where it's more of a waste of time, and that face to face connection is the most valuable.
Well, the big functions, it's going to be the super not super the very technical specific needs that are in some sort of whether it's programming software, coding, or tech manufacturing, biotech, chemistry, anybody who has a really strong background in mathematics, I shouldn't say anybody, that's an absolute, right now, currently, currently at this moment, if you have a very strong background in mathematics and a facility for mathematics, you are the most employable person in the market, because almost everything that is in need right now has some sort of math roots in it. I mean, even music is math, although musicians don't make any money. So what you've got is those technical function jobs and the big pool of them that you can apply for. But even now, when you look at the work, you know, return to RTO, return to the office, all these other things that are going on, companies have sort of gotten past that because they don't have the needs, in part because they have artificial intelligence coming on board and some other opportunities, other ways to do that. They offshored a lot of the manufacturing jobs over the last two, three decades. Some of those may come back, but now the what is basically a white-collar manufacturer is at risk. So you have to find places. I think the reality is, as I talk about this, is even though the largest employers are Fortune 1000, the learning curve and the best opportunities probably exist at mid-cap.
Let's talk about artificial intelligence, because especially as it relates to people who may be graduating from high school right now and want to go in the professional world, or graduating from college and want to go in the professional world, because my entry-level job was at another radio station in Chicago. It was in the traffic department. It was commercial traffic, which meant you scheduled the commercials that ran on the radio station. And the way this worked back in 1999, and the way I described the workflow, it might as well be like Marconi, the way this thing worked, where the physical audio tape of the commercial would be messengered to the radio station, and then you would sit down at behind a very creaky computer and type in the advertiser, type in the out cue on the commercial, and then the creaky computer system would generate a cartridge number, back when commercials were on physical tape, a cartridge number to be filed into the system and then put on the air by the disc jockey. And yes, it was a lot of manual labor, and it is a process that is 100% automated and probably remote today, but it was my foot in the door, because I did that for 6 weeks, and then someone from the FM station said, do you want to be an intern on Kevin Matthews' morning show? And I said, absolutely, I do. And that was my entry into the business, through data entry jobs that don't exist anymore. So if AI is taking up all of the these jobs that used to be data entry or rote, or things that were kind of considered wastes of time relative to the more important functions you had in the company, what's your foot in the door if AI is doing the job for you?
Right. Well, that's where are you going to meet the person? And that's really it. Internships currently are one of the best avenues into good employment, because an internship, I can tell you that the interns that I've hired, and I've hired from Ivy League, and I've hired from Indiana University, et cetera, and they are absolutely a breath of fresh air for people in my generation, because they have all the skill sets I need. They understand the technology. I had an intern showed up on my birthday, and I had forgotten that I'd hired him, and he walked in and said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, your intern." And I said, okay. He said, hang on a second. And I went down to IT and I said, listen, I want you to take a core dump of the last 10 years of all of our clients, which would be the people that are looking for work. And I want you, and I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to break these down by their age, their job, their income range, their title, et cetera, it's geographic, blah, blah, blah. And I got rid of him for a week. And a couple hours later, he's knocking on the door. I said, okay, I have the information. I said, yeah, I know. I told him to give it to you. He said, no, I have it. Yeah, I know. I told him to get, no, I'm done. And I was like, what? You're done? What do you mean you're done? Yeah. I had to throw out 30% of the titles because they don't really make any sense. It's like the left-handed, you know, King of Tuesday. You know, this is not a real job. And it's just,
I went to college for that, by the way.
Left-handed King of Tuesday. I didn't get out of bed for Tuesdays. But anyway, so what you end up learning is he was incredibly talented. And in our organization, there was very little buffer between him and the CEO. You know, let's get so-and-so to do it. And being in the room, in some ways, to your point, being in the room. So how do you get in the room? Is there an internship there? Is there a place that you can get your foot in the door? Yes. Does somebody know somebody who knows somebody there? And that's a complicated process, and I could talk about that forever.
And then when it comes to, you mentioned RTO, return to office, what's the average in-office work week like? Because based on my own unofficial observations on the train Monday through Friday, it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those are the days it looks like 2019 as far as people on the train, people walking through the loop. Monday, it's starting to pick up. But Friday, especially summer Fridays, you're by yourself, essentially. So as companies bring people back to the office, is 4 days now the norm, or are we seeing some 5 day work weeks out there?
I think in general, and again, we go back to the type of function that you have. If you have a job that requires that you're in the office, it doesn't make any difference. You can't be the head of production putting the marketing flyers together and or answering the, whatever it is. You can't, if you have to be there, you have to be there. You can't have work from home dental assistant. You know, but when you have an opportunity for people, see people who have the skill sets that they can work from home, and it makes them more, you can attract a better level of talent because my wife and I both work. One of us has to be home on Fridays. We've got coverage for every day but Friday or Tuesday or whatever it is. And you make these transactional deals with people, that makes sense. To your question, I think 4 days is pretty normal, but there's some companies that are like, boy, I've been waiting for the opportunity to make all these people come back, and now they're gonna, because I'm the king and this is my castle and I need to see all my people.
We're talking about the hiring market in the Chicago area with Rick Cobb of 2Discern. This is At Issue on WBBM News Radio. When people come back to the office, it seems like the big trend, especially amongst younger workers, is self-expression and a lot of things that used to be off limits. I mean, you used to talk about in radio, you know, avoid talking about sex, politics, and religion, because those are the three hot button topics that everybody had an opinion on. And now when you're in the office, that's part of dealing with people, and that people are, you know, thanks to social media, I think they're very used to being the star of their own show. But if you are a supervisor and you're trying to get everybody in the office to work together towards that one goal, how do you manage personalities? And how do you also acknowledge the fact that it's the 21st century and people are a lot more forward about what they think than they might have been in previous decades?
Yeah, I think it requires a thick skin and a unification around what the actual mission is for your department. If you have a team of four or five people, you have to make it very clear what it is that we're trying to get done and what your individual role is in contribution to that, and that what the expectations are for when we're going to meet. You set those sort of guidelines and boundaries around how the job works. Outside of that, there has to be a lot more flexibility about how that person will accomplish that work. You know, there's a lot of software out there that is designed to get a person to do a specific number of functions, a specific number of times a day in order to get to a result. There are a lot of businesses where that is not possible. You can't have somebody, it's not piecemeal manufacturing. You know, sometimes the conversations you're having with customers if you're in business development, or the relationships that you're developing if you're a lawyer or whatever, those take time. Those are things that you have to build out. So you say, macro, what do I want to get done? What do I want my team to get done by the end of the week? I want to have reporting mechanisms that allow me to get that. But you know what? If Joanne works better because she has an ailing parent at home and it has never affected her work, and I can make that fit into the schedule to get her because of her skill sets, which if, you know, let's say you're getting her for $20,000 less than you would get her if she didn't have this need to be home a day of the week. That, so you're transactionally dealing with what you have flexibility in, and you're trying to hold course on what really functions in the company and your mission. What do I have to get done? And that's a lot of work. It's a lot more work than it used to be a manager. Fewer people want to be managers now than ever, because they it used to be the way up. But now it's the way up, but you don't have an assistant and you don't have this, you know, you have to learn more software and you have to be traveling into more different places, and it's a very difficult job now to be a manager.
Now, if you're bringing people back to the office, and this was definitely a case 2 or 3 years ago where, you know, they left in March of 2020, they went home, they did the work, and they attended the virtual meetings, they did everything they had to do. Mm-hmm. But then they came back to work, and it was obvious their personality had changed because they had also spent the rest of their free time, you know, staring at their phone and reacting to things that they saw or read. Mm-hmm. And so there were personality conflicts bringing people back. Sure. And going back to how difficult it is to be a manager these days, how do you manage through that? And when people are at loggerheads about issues that have nothing to do with the job.
Right. Well, they have to be. I mean, that the personal issues back and forth were maybe more benign, you know, which baseball or football team did you pull for, that kind of thing. They weren't really as politically divisive. But you as the manager, your first responsibility goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is we're all here to get something done, and here's how we're going to do it, and here's your role in that. And other than that, we have to treat each other with respect, because you're not going to be able to get your work done if he or she doesn't do her job. And if you're unable to have a civil conversation with the person, you have to cut those losses. No one is so talented and so irreplaceable anymore that you can't, that they're, it's acceptable to let them come in and just destabilize the rest of the organization. Used to be allowed, but it just doesn't make any sense anymore. There's no redundancy. If I don't have you, I don't have anybody. If you can't fit in, you can't be here.
And then very quickly, just looking at the trends going forward, what can we expect in the next, you know, year or two as far as technological disruption or skills that you need to have to work your way up the ladder in whatever position you may hold?
Yeah, I think the general advice to an individual is to stay mentally healthy and current as an individual and as a human. That sounds kind of ooh, wow. But there's a lot of data coming out now about AI and the fact that they do the brain scan on people who resort to using AI on a regular basis, and their ability to think cognitively for long periods of time or think in complex ways is reduced. They go from all these different hot colored spots in the brain to sort of a one steady solid color. And that's terrifying in such a short period of time for that to happen. And there's going to be something else that comes after AI. We don't know what it is. And that to be current and available, I think that's one thing. And the other thing is to be flexible in the organization that you're in. You know, if you are trying to make yourself very specifically, I only do this, at some point you become less desirable, because I don't need that only thing anymore. I can have somebody else or something else do that. So you have to be multi-talented in terms and be available to play with the team.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago, thank you for joining us on this weekend's edition of At Issue. If you want to listen to this program again, you can hear it at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and now on the iHeartRadio app. Join us next week when we talk about artificial intelligence, what's real and what's hype. That's next Sunday on At Issue. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.